what Lance shared is a classic use of lean value stream mapping techniques. You know, his focus area is, again, the software development lifecycle. He's focusing on reducing the amount of waste that is in that process flow so that he can reduce the cycle time, deliver faster, free up that capacity from the developers so that they can deliver more right. quickly, which, again, is going to translate into cost savings or incremental revenue, which is going to speak volumes to the C-suite.
Hey, this is Dave Pryor. Welcome to Leading Agile Sound Notes and to our second installment of our series on value stream mapping. So Mary Lloyd and Lance Kiner back. Thank you both for making time in your schedules for this.
Absolutely. Great to be here, Dave.
Yeah. Mary, did you know this is going to be a podcast? I thought we were just going to have a meeting, but Dave has invited us to a podcast. What in the world?
Just record everything. Yes. So last time I showed a way of value stream mapping that I learned when I went through the Lean Agile Visual Management Program at Modus Coop Brandi, and how that kind of value stream mapping was all about the team taking ownership of how it works. Lance is going to show a different kind of value stream mapping this time, and then Mary's going to take over in the next two episodes and teach Lance and I everything we're doing wrong. So
she's going to take us to task. The woodshed. We're going to have a woodshed in the background, right?
So we did all the intros in the last podcast. I'm assuming you watched it, so we're just going to jump right in. Lance, what do you got for us?
Hey, so David, I'm a technical coach, and I show up and I help delivery teams, specifically developers and testers, how to work more smoothly, which usually is related to some either automation of testing or even deployment, and how to communicate well with each other. You know, there's some interpersonal things and breaking down boundaries. And somewhere along the way, you know, Mary, I'll tell you a secret. I used to just show up and teach the developers or testers things, and the project and things around me would just do whatever they're supposed to do. And I would either absorb things as I needed to, or sometimes there'd be a surprise. Like, oh, well, if I knew that, we would have done some of this a little differently. So I decided that, well, I probably ought to try something different. And so what I started doing is kind of a little bit like what David showed us last week, was develop a value stream map so I could see the big picture. So this is called employing some systems thinking. So I don't have any surprises. And usually you could respond to the surprises. They weren't that big a deal, but sometimes you could miss opportunities. And that really was cool. And I used to do it with the whole team. We'd sit together and it wouldn't be as detailed as David where I don't know. It might be as detailed. It's hard to say. We'd spend about an hour to 90 minutes. It wasn't what I would call a heavy duty detailed value stream map, but enough so we could get a picture of how requirements were discovered and then how software was deployed. So that was cool. And I moved along with that and I was pretty happy with that for a few years. And then lately I was discovering that David, Mary, I don't know. I don't get it. I think I'm a nice guy. I don't know what people, they get worried or scared, but sometimes
people
it's
say
hard.
Things.
What's that?
People say things.
They say things. We'll have to talk later. Anyway, sometimes I discover that the executives don't want to buy technical coaching. I'm like, what? Don't you know about all these things that are happening? And I guess they don't. Or maybe they do a little bit, but they're not quite sure how to assess the things that are happening. They have multiple things that are happening. And the thing that I care about to help them solve versus the other things that are bothering them, it's difficult for them to make good decisions on that, because they're kind of like, well, you know, if I hire a technical coach, that'll cost some money. I could just we've been doing this for a good 20 years this way. Well, maybe I'll just let that dog keep sleeping.
What is the business benefit, right?
Yeah, right.
Cool. So I have a question. I would like to play devil's advocate. So I'm thinking of me when I was a project manager. So somebody like you comes in and you're already a pain in my ass because right. you're going to start telling everyone to work differently. And then you're going to start mapping out some process that probably has nothing to do with how I need these people to work to get stuff done. And everything I do is like a fly in your ointment for you. It's just causing you discomfort and pain. how do you explain to somebody like me, whose job it is to just keep cracking the whip and getting these guys to crank out the code and get the body dragged across the finish line? You want them to be better at their job. I just need them to do things.
Yeah.
So how do you explain the value of it to me?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I used to use words. I used to say like, well, I'm gonna fix. We're gonna reduce the amount of defects that are getting sent into production, and we're going to do some things that will speed up the development life cycle. But we're gonna do some things that are slow it down at first too, before you get the payback on the new capabilities. So I used to use words, and that's kind of a funny thing to say, but that works well actually up to the director level. But it doesn't work as well at the CEO or
the people upstairs need pictures.
Right. They don't want all those words. They want to get to the point. Like, and so I've been trying to listen to them and change myself a little bit to be more C-suite compatible. And so let me show you the type of value. Okay. So now instead of using words, what we can do is make a slick report. Okay. And I'm kind of mean that somewhat silly and somewhat no, it's really, you know, they people need more than just words, because if I talk to Dave and his boss says, well, yeah, but you sure you really want this guy there, and he's gonna remember some of the words, and he's gonna say, well, you know, it sounds good, blah blah blah, but then that guy's like, he might ask something that makes Dave uncomfortable, and he goes, well, yeah, you're right, maybe this will be too much trouble. So if I give him something that he could carry with him, like a slide deck that shows something, and if Dave understands it, he's going to be able to like pass that information on to whoever asks him. In fact, even email it if it comes to that.
Okay.
So I'm going to show you a simpler value stream than what Dave did, because I've after doing these a few times with delivery teams, I thought, you know, there's about five parts of delivery in the value stream, and we can genericize it a little bit, and we can get this done faster. Dave's right. It's good to get the value of having team members know clearly what each other's doing and connect. But I'm trying to just get started. So I'm trying to find a quicker hit. So let me share.
And so with this, while you're pulling it up, this value stream that you're about to show is as part of how you enter into the conversation with the person at the C-level, somebody who is thinking about it systematically, programmatically. What is the value of the technical coaching? How are you going to help these teams?
Well, almost. So I tried the value stream map for a while with a relatively recent client, and it wasn't good enough. So I had to adjust. So I'm going to show you the first part that works up to the director, and maybe CTO, maybe not. But because it doesn't quite have that ka-ching factor. It doesn't have the cash, Ola, what are people paying for that? And I'll show you a second. The
sizzle.
Yeah, right. So there's a step one, and the first step is just to get the value stream visible. And I wouldn't go to the C-suite with that until I did step two. So, but let me explain a little bit of step one, just so folks can kind of pick up a little bit about how this is done. Is this okay? Is this coming over okay on your screen?
Yeah, it's great.
All right, cool. So this is the during the interview with teams, what I realized when I look back on the times we would do this whiteboarding together with teams is that basically we would break development into these five boxes: business idea, formal requirements created, development happens, testing happens, and deployment to production. Mm-hmm. And so I'd call a five box value stream. And this is fine for software delivery teams. If you're like delivering podcasts or something else, this is not going to be suitable for that. But this is an example of that should work for most software delivery teams. An operations team may not be suitable for an operations team. But it's
but they'll have different stages that the work goes through one way or the other.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. You got it. So each of these. Each of these columns is a step in the value stream. And what I would do is I would interview people, and I would collect some notes, and I would get some data. And the data is like, how much effort is it to do this step? And then how much waiting do you guys do to get that step started and finished?
Okay.
And then sometimes things, even though you did the step, sometimes the work gets kicked back because something doesn't work out or there's something missing. And that's what we call rework.
So when you're when you've got these different times from the workflow, is that pulled out of a system, or are you just asking people questions?
Oh yeah, no, that's a great question. So today I it's asking questions. So what I would interview. Okay. I've refined this into just interviewing the manager of the team, and that I would prep them with another worksheet, which would cause them to ask a lot of questions to their developers, so that when okay. we meet, they have a pretty good grasp of
okay.
anything that would come up, and they can bring more people into this too. In fact, I could do this with the whole team, but it just tends to be
take longer.
We seem to do pretty well just with the. Maybe the lead developer or manager and whoever the manager wants to bring in. It's worked out.
Okay.
Well.
Can you explain lead time to the folks who don't know what that is?
Oh, cool. So lead time is how long you have to wait from getting this business idea over on the left-hand side to where the customer can use it.
Okay. So Vice President Steve burps in the shower until somebody right. buys it in a store.
Right, right, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually, I'm stating it how I see it, but it's a kind of a controversial or ill-defined topic, what lead time is. So,
I think we're not going to go down that rabbit hole right now.
I think I'm consistent with some of the definitions, but there's other definitions that are a little bit, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
So anyways, the main thing is, as you can see, I get ranges, and this is like yep. for a medium bit of work, a medium requirement. And so what a team or a manager can tell me is roughly the range of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it turns out that sometimes when they do this, people didn't realize all this information. It was never written yeah. down in one spot. And so people that are, like you were saying, if you share it with the team, they may get some new awarenesses that they didn't have.
Yeah.
Now this isn't quite what I would call very suitable for a, I mean, this is great for somebody into the details, but to get us a little bit out of the weeds, putting it into a visual, and here's a quick visual that you can use for comparison analysis across teams. You may not care to beat teams up for having large time on their value streams because they're really different teams. In fact, right. you shouldn't. I'll just say it that way. But it's nice to see in your organization if you get all the value streams together, you know, what does it look like in my organization? Who's the fastest team? Why are they the fastest team? Who's the slowest team? Why are they the slowest team? And just learn. You don't have to like beat somebody on the head on it, but this is a good way that anybody in the C-suite would get some value about how is their portfolio moving along.
So for the folks that are watching that may not be thinking about some of the like more subtle things about this, the first slide you showed is basically teasing what's to come. This slide is more digestible. So from a social engineering standpoint, this is where the big dramatic story comes in, because they see 112 days, like, oh my God, what the hell? Right. What can we do about that? And now you've created that hole that Dennis talks about in their heart that you can fill. Right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. I'm trying. Yeah. We're trying to get people to see something so clearly that they want to do something about it. And, these, remember those ranges, I believe the requirements time. I mean, this first row is built from that, example data I showed.
Yeah.
So it took, and that's anonymized data from a real team out there in the world. So it took that team 20 days to get requirements ready for a team to use. And then there's some wait time, and you can see clearly what the wait time is by the, what would you call it?
So I want to ask a question about this. So we don't know, I'm looking at team G. It's 112 days until I get to testing, but isn't it possible that 112 days could be because we spent so little time in requirements that they're so poorly defined that it causes a ton of back and forth and rework between the team and the people that capture the requirements?
Absolutely.
It might not be like our guys are just slow.
Right. There'll be technical and non-technical. When I say technical, by the way, I'm speaking from a developer standpoint, but there'll be like developer-related issues and non-developer-related. It could be workflow issues rather than software development technology.
So it doesn't mean that the people that are writing the code are bad at their jobs. There's all kinds of systematic factors. I mean, they could be working on 18 different projects. Like, all kinds of things could be influencing why this is taking so long.
Absolutely. Yeah. They may have gotten requirements in an email, and then they spend a lot of time figuring out what the heck that means.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
cool.
So this creates a high level picture into an organization that they they may have had a, how do I say this, an instinct about, but they may not have had clarity. Like they probably always knew that Team G was kind of different because the lead time's really large. And there's other teams like Team B, which is faster, right? And so they may have had an instinctive understanding, but they didn't have this data. And this data helps us kind of lump things into two ways. You'll see up here on the top, there's this thing, this says delivery coaching reduces waiting. So delivery coaching fixes a lot of these workflow issues that come up and reduces those wait times. And technical coaching reduces the effort that's required to do, say, testing or development. And so when you look at this picture, now you can kind of see when a client says, oh, I got delivery coaches and I have technical coaches, and they'll have a very clear idea on what kinds of problems they're solving from a value stream standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it true to say isn't it true to say though, Lance, that tech coaching, while it reduces effort, it can also reduce the waiting time, right? Because if we automate things that are not necessarily value add from an individual person perspective, we need to do them. They're important for us to do them. But the developers, instead of manually testing something, if we develop a set of test scripts that run automatically, then those developers can grab what's next in their queue and their backlog and start focusing on that. So I see it as kind of both. It's, you know, it automates the things that can be automated, which kind of naturally also shortens the waiting time as well. It creates the overall cycle time of the event is shorter. We deliver more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the example you were stating about developers waiting on testing to do something, it sounds like that could be a real thing, like you're saying. Typically, what I find, though, is they are not waiting. They're like multitasking across another story while they're waiting. But it could be, as you said it, the wait times here are where no work's getting moved forward. They have to wait for something to happen.
Like the QA.
And you're right. They're going to be multitasking still, even in that case.
Right.
So I want to ask a question about it, too. So the technical coaching might be teaching them to use like test-driven development or do mobbing or something like that. Whereas the delivery coaching is just looking at it more from a systematic standpoint, what downstream is gumming up the works that's causing things to take so long.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So maybe the reason why the requirements take a long time is the team doesn't have a product owner. And or they do, but the product owner, there's some dependency the product owner has that requires them to do some cost of coordination activities with somebody else, and that's why they wait.
Okay.
Or they have, it's neither of those two. They have a product owner, but they're too busy to actually prepare.
Yeah, the product owner is like for working on three different teams at once.
Yeah, yeah. Right, there we go. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you've got this. What happens next?
Okay, cool. So now let's talk about what this doesn't help us with. So this doesn't help us at the C-suite level because directors and team managers, they'll understand this and they like the details. So they'll like this visual and then they'll like ask questions like, well, you know, what's going on? Why is that big weight there? And then that's why in that previous slide with the data, you can refer to it and tell the story with that. But this doesn't help the C-suite or the CEO and some of which don't we're never a developer. They're not really maybe even from IT. So now we need to change the nature of the conversation to something about the ka-ching factor, like what's the cost and what's the opportunity. So I'll show you this report that has that, and then I'll describe to you how we got it. And we use the value stream map as an input into it.
Okay.
And so once you have a value stream map, you can do some other things. Now, here's an example of a report. It's not the most beautiful thing, but here we are. So it's this is a three slide deck that you could take to the C-suite. And we're trying to express now things in the form of economics and opportunities. And so today we just stated, you know, it takes this much time to bring an idea to market. Time is spent on these wasteful activities. We talk about that. And instead, here's the opportunity. We could do this, right? So we're setting the table, saying like, this is what we do today. And this is what we can do instead. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a visual with money stacked on a scale, et cetera, et cetera. So that's to get him to let me even get to the next slide. And I hope that this would be like, oh, wow, I'm interested. Tell me more. You know, that's the response I want. Okay, cool. And so the next slide then gets into the dollar amount. Oops. And so now it's again more economic. So the cost per story is this much and the lead time is this much and the escape defects are at this number. And this is a real team. I'm not trying to make a straw man situation. This is real data.
Right.
And so what we can do with technical coaching, if we automate tests and deployment, just that's all I say, we can get it to this cost. And now they're
going to have to invest, right? So spending almost $22,000 now. But if they spend some extra money on technology, they'll be able to get that cost down to $8,800.
Yeah, story. Or $1,000. But then, you know, there's a cost for that service. So here it is. And then there's a break-even point, and the break-even will be, you know, 4 to 9 months. And so this is like any consumer, anybody, you know, any consumer who has like the AC guy show up at their step and say like, you know, your AC unit's kind of costing you a lot of money. And you're like, huh, really? You're already like, but you're already kind of suspicious because they're going to charge you money to get to that savings. But if they lay it out like this, then it becomes a very rational, easy to decision to decide if you want to invest in that. Because, you know, here we are. We have a quarter of the cost per user story, or we can keep doing what we're doing and we'll stay at that number. And then the last is just more details about like, well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to like do all these cost reductions? And that's what that is. And so now the C-suite person typically will be interested in the economics. Well, first the opportunity, which is what the first slide is. The second one is a little more data. And the last one is, you know, how do we do that?
Okay.
So now the question is, that's great. How do you even get that? Well, how we get that is using a tool. And the tool runs a simulator on the value stream. And I run a year-long simulation using a free license for a visual value stream map tool called VS Optima. Allows me to plug in that value stream, put in the cost of labor for those columns in the value stream. Remember the interview had those the five box value stream, and run a year long simulation. And what it does is it simulates the data that I put in there. So if I talk about rework, that means if it's 44% escape defects, that means a lot of stories are going to go back around and around and around, and it simulates that, and it comes up with those numbers.
So how does it figure out how much you're going to save?
So I go back into the value stream map and I make a second new value stream map, the proposed value
stream state.
Map. And then I say, well, I know if we do test automation based on experience and data in the market, the amount of rework should go down by blah. And so I adjust that. And I know that, and I know that they'll take effort to do that. So I'll have to add a little effort though to the development cycle because we have to actually do the test automation. So this is the weird thing that a developer usually it's developers. I don't know about testers would say this. They go like, oh my God, you're going to use up more of my time to write some automation. How is that going to make sense? That's not going to help me at all. Well, that's what am I trying to say here? That's not a big picture thinking. That's optimizing the wrong thing. I mean, you're just thinking about your part of the value stream map instead of the whole piece.
Okay. Yeah. So where the thing I showed yesterday was about trying to get a team to take ownership of how they work, the thing you're showing is building an economic case justification for technical coaching and how it can help the organization overall.
Yep.
And different steps along the way. Okay.
Why should they keep me around, Dave? That's all I'm trying to make a case for.
Cool.
And honestly, again, folks on this who listen to this podcast, some of you are going to say like, well, of course that's going to be valuable. Because if you work with teams, if you're a team manager, you understand what's going on at the ground floor. But the C-suite people aren't going to respond to that. That's a hole in your heart, but not a hole in their heart. They need to see numbers.
The other thing that's important here is like if you think about all the agile coaches that have been laid off over the past year, as companies kind of come to the decision like, oh, we got this. you're showing them that they don't have it and how you can help fix it.
Right. Yeah. And whether you're a technical coach or not, by the way, as you can see, there's a process side of that and a technical side of that as well. So you can make us tell a story either way.
Cool. So, Mary.
Yeah.
You're our expert.
How did I get the expert label? Good baby.
We voted for that after off camera.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you're the lean expert in the three of us. I think that's fair to say.
What I would see with what Lance shared is a classic use of lean value stream mapping techniques. You know, his focus area is, again, the software development lifecycle. He's focusing on reducing the amount of waste that is in that process flow so that he can reduce the cycle time, deliver faster, free up that capacity from the developers so that they can deliver more right. quickly, which again is going to translate into cost savings or incremental revenue, which is going to speak volumes to the C-suite. Cool.
All right.
I love that Mary said that because I think there's a next level here, Dave. This is just like the start or maybe second step. I think there's a third step and it's about like, well, what's the profit I'm going to get?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't have
that. And have you figured that out? You don't have that one yet. All right.
Unless an organization has invested in like an activity-based costing effort where they have that per unit revenue per unit cost, it's difficult to get really close to, you know, increased incremental profit, but you know, you can show the cost savings, you can show the incremental revenue, all things being equal.
Cool.
There's a book to read called Profit Streams. Kind of sounds like value streams and it's the profit side of it. And so I haven't read it yet. So I'm talking about something I don't know that much about yet, other than interviewed somebody about it, but I haven't crack the book cover. But yes, I'm hoping that will create a new idea to make that pitch even better. So I can talk about not just cost savings, which is a big deal though, you know, how much profit can you make?
Profit, cool. Or other kinds, because you can also speak to it in other kinds of value, right? I mean, the beautiful thing about whatever value stream and whatever technique you're using is the whole idea behind a value stream is we're delivering values throughout this high-level process across these stages, right? The value stream stages. And we can deliver more things of value, whether that be profit, cost savings, revenue increase, customer satisfaction increase, right? Team engagement, back to what you did with it, Dave. I mean, I think these are all really great examples of how you can use a concept like value stream mapping and apply different ways.
And so tomorrow, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say tomorrow because they won't see it tomorrow. When we come back with our next episode, dun, dun, dun. Or next time on Value Streams, what are they going to see, Mary?
Well, I would love to just kind of wrap this all up and talk a little bit about what I saw with what you shared, Dave, and that idea of a team value stream mapping, what Lance has shared with us, and then kind of pull it together into what I use a lot from a business architecture perspective. You know, we have value streams that are a domain in business architecture, and they can be used along with other types of information in an organization to really create a really strong strategic decision framework for the organization. So excited to
thank you.
I think that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. All right. So Mary, if they want to get in touch with you in the meantime, what's the best way to do that?
Please feel free to, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can feel free to email me at mary.lloyd@leadingagile.com. And my phone number is also available on the
We're not giving the phone number out. These people will be calling you in the middle of the night like, I have problems. I'm very lonely and my value stream doesn't work. You don't want that.
Yeah. Happy to
Lance, what about you?
let's see here. lance.kind@leadingagile.com and I'm on Twitter at Lancer, Lance with an R, Kind, and LinkedIn, Lancer Kind. Those are probably the best ways. So
okay.
Yeah, and if anybody on this who's listening, any listener has heard, well, any listener who's read Profit Streams and wants to endorse it or wave me off, let me know.
All right. And I'm Dave Pryor. You can find me LinkedIn, dave.pryor@leadingagile.com, Drunken PM or Mr. Sungo everywhere else. But thank you both for making time for this, and we'll be back next time, and Mary's going to take over and school us all up. So thank you for watching, dun, dun, and thank dun. You for being here, you two.
You bet. Cheers. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Mary.